Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, it's just you and me this week. It's going to be a short show compared to the last two. We were very guest-heavy the last 2 weeks. Once again, thank you to Robert Muggy and Simon Majumder for helping out with being a guest on the last couple weeks' show. Of course, the door is open for both of them anytime. We'll get to the grab-a-pencil portion in a little bit of this week's show. We had some changes because of screenings and weather and everything, so we're going to start with Dead People We Like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. And man, the cult cinema world took a hit this past week or so. We start with Howard Hessman, that, yes, best known as Dr. Johnny Fever on WKRP in Cincinnati, was part of the famous improv group The Committee. And like some artists, especially if they're known mostly for television, yeah, I know there was Head of the Class. I saw that a little bit. But I like to go back and find out what they were doing cinematically before making it onto television. Of course, as I mentioned, he was a member of The Committee. I remember, yeah, he played. He was under the pseudonym Don Sturdy for a few years before changing to Howard Hessman, I think in 1973. But I remember he was in an episode of Dragnet, Some Kind of Nut from 1969. I remembered him as a drama teacher in Billy Jack, a recording engineer in Cisco Pike, Steelyard Blues in 1973. Shampoo. I remember he had one scene in The Sunshine Boys. Wow, request line open here at Film Sociology. I have to check. Wow, this is what happens when you record in studio. But films like Tunnel Vision, Jackson County Jail, Silent Movie, The Big Bus, all of this before WKRP, The Other Side of Midnight. And he was one of those guys I remember seeing once I saw him in that. To see him in anything else was kind of cool. I do remember, yeah, there was a TV movie version of the play You Can't Take It With You that CBS did. And if you were on the CBS roster, you appeared in this show. The big one was Art Carney was Grandpa. Gene Stapleton was in it. Marla Gibbs, Beth Howland. Harry Morgan. Just a slew of people. Polly Holiday, and he played Wilbur C. Henderson in that televised version of the play. Americathon, Private Lessons, Honky Tonk Freeway. Yeah, Smooth Walker and Dr. Detroit. Terry Ladd, of course, and This is Spinal Tap. Another film play I remember seeing and liking was the TV version of Mr. Roberts, where he played Doc. That was with Robert Hayes, Kevin Bacon, and Charles Durning, as well as Mary Lou Henner. My Chauffeur, Police Academy 2, yeah. The 1986 film called Heat with Burt Reynolds, not the 1995 crime epic. Reuben and Ed, Little Miss Millions, Out of Sync, Gridlocked. The last thing I remember seeing him in, and he was constantly working up until his death, if I remember. I remember him as in About Schmidt from 2002. The Rocker, Halloween 2, All About Steve. And his last credit was playing the character of Big Oil in Dirty Politics from 2018. So, yes, thank you, Howard Hessman, and thank you for creating Dr. Johnny Fever. The show and the personality that launched, I'm sure, a generation of aspiring DJs. And if we weren't as smooth as Venus Flytrap. Also passing away this week is one of the grand dames of Italian cinema. Monica Vitti died at the age of 90, best known for her work with Michelangelo Antonioni, including La Ventura, La Notte, the Eclipse, Red Desert. I should stick with Italian. I remember... her first English language film was Modesty Blaze from 1966, which I need to revisit. If you're a fan of Austin Powers and spy spoofs, check out Modesty Blaze. So Modesty Blaze from 1966. And for you action heroes, Big Bob Wall passed away on January 30th at the age of 82, probably best known as O'Hara in Enter the Dragon. That was his second credit. He's the one that brings dishonor to the tournament and gets a bad end from Bruce Lee. Also appeared as Bob in Way of the Dragon, was an uncredited mob henchman in Black Belt Jones, played Carl Miller in Game of Death, but that requires watching Game of Death, and I don't want you to do that. Enter the Ninja, Code of Silence, Invasion USA. Hey, Golan Globus Theater, you should do a tribute to this guy. Was in Firewalker, Hero in the Terror, Sidekicks, and a few other films back in the 2010s. So salute to Bob Wall. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Catching up on some titles that I got to watch recently, I'm almost finished with the BBS box set. One film I had never seen and one I hadn't seen in years, and better late than never. But the film A Safe Place, which stars Tuesday Weld, Orson Welles, and Jack Nicholson. This is written and directed by Henry Jaglom, and it's a woman who's in her fantasy world dealing with her past while trying to deal with her present at the same time. And you could say this is the early roots of the Manic Pixie Dream Girl. Also, Sandy Dennis in Sweet November from 1968. But she meets a young man who's trying to get to know her, played by Phil Proctor, and things seem to be going well, though she has her idiosyncrasies and quirks. And then when her old boyfriend shows up, played by Jack Nicholson, that kind of throws a wrench in things. Orson Welles comes off the bench as strictly known as the magician. Good performance by Weld, by everybody. I have to admit, as a older male, my patience kind of wore a little bit, but then as the film early on, it's one of those things I'm reminded of the line in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? If I tell you it's sunny, you'll say it's cloudy. And if I say it's cloudy, you'll say it's sunny. There's that kind of dynamic early on, and Phil Proctor's character kind of runs with it for the Tuesday Weld character. But as the film goes on, we find out why Susan, played by Tuesday Weld, and what her past was like. So I got to lighten up a little bit. But good performance by Weld. And this was one of the lesser known of the BBS films. And anyway, it's a curiosity worth checking out. But the one that really hit with me, and I vaguely remember seeing this probably when I was in high school, which meant I wasn't ready for it, but The King of Marvin Gardens, Bob Rafelson's follow-up to Five Easy Pieces. Jack Nicholson, really against type, as a kind of a quiet radio host who winds up going to Atlantic City to visit with his long-lost brother, played by Bruce Dern, who Dern's character is into a big get-rich-quick scheme involving real estate in Atlantic City as well as Hawaii. Ellen Burstyn's in this as well. Julianne Robinson. Scatman Crothers, really good as a mobster. Apparently, according to history, Crothers said this was his favorite performance. But to see Nicholson and Dern working together, and they had done some smaller pictures in the 1960s, late 60s. But this is already now on my list of favorite films involving siblings. Nicholson's character, like I said, more introverted, is getting dragged in further and further into this development deal with the Dern character. And Bruce Dern's character sees, sunshine and paradise. And apparently he's the only one that sees this coming. So Yeah, it's if you have a sibling and you have a sibling who's known for having aspirations, this film will resonate really strongly. And the other part that kind of means a lot to me is this film came out in 1972 and it's filmed in Atlantic City. I think if you're a longtime film sociology listener, you know I love the film Atlantic City. I got to spend many summers of my youth in Atlantic City, the city. And the boardwalk, and to see it when it's old and tired and before the casinos come and kind of take things over. It's some gorgeous, gorgeous photography of a city that once was. So, yeah, The King of Marvin Gardens as a part of the Criterion BBS box set. A couple of older titles that also have come out on Blu-ray this week, courtesy of KL Studio Classics, that's Kino Lorber. One I've seen many times and was fun to revisit. The other, a double feature of two films I had never seen before, because that's what happens when you get stuff sent to you. But Kino Lorber has a KL Studio Classic release on Blu-ray of Philip Kaufman's version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Now, there are many who've said that this is better than the original, the Don Siegel version from 1956. I try not to rank those things. I think both Body Snatchers, as well as the Abel Ferrara one, can exist in one's universe. So you don't have to put one against the other or pit one against the other or rank them. But taking the story of Invasion of the Body Snatchers from a small town and setting it in San Francisco with good performances from Donald Sutherland, Brooke Adams, Leonard Nimoy, Jeff Goldblum, Veronica Cartwright, blink and you'll miss a cameo by Robert Duvall early on. And this is really still, it was a reminder, this is one of the scariest films of the 1970s. And that's high praise if you consider The Exorcist, Jaws, Halloween, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And of course, one of the great endings, which I don't want to give away even for a film that was released in 1978. Great use of sound, great use of shadow and light, and it was just a fun, creepy romp to revisit Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is out on Blu-ray from KL Studio Classics. That's Kino Lorber. And then they also put out this week a double feature, and friends, it happens. There are just films over time that I miss. It happens. It happens to you. It just happens. You know, if it happens to me, it's apparently a big deal because I got the film show. But we all have gaps in our cinematic world. I had never seen the film FX or its sequel. Well, and now I have, because they're out this week on Blu-ray as a part of a KL Studio Classics double feature. Brian Brown, Brian Dennehy, the two Brians. Brown plays, for those who don't know, and this was later made into a series, which I haven't seen. But Brian Brown plays a special effects specialist who is brought in by a government agent played by Cliff DeYoung. And it's interesting, I saw a similar role from Cliff DeYoung performance in Blue Collar, which I watched last month. That was from 1977. And anyway, Brian Brown is assigned to fake an assassination on a mob witness who's going undercover, played by Jerry Orbach. And guess what? Things don't go according to plan. And Brian Dennehy plays a New York City cop who is also on the run, on the chase of Brian Brown's character, who is on the run big time in this. Diane Venora is in this as well. Gordon from Sesame Street is in this. And I know Golan Globus has a podcast coming soon of Willie Dynamite, so but check that out. Lots of familiar faces on this, and good use of the special effects, even in the, this is 1986, but so as far as use of latex and plastics, clever work, and even if you can figure it out, it is still a fun romp to watch Brian Brown kind of do his fugitive impression on the run constantly, but good use of effects and just a fun kind of popcorn movie. And then they made a sequel in 1991 where, and most of the time with sequels, of course, I'm going to ask, did we really need this? Did anybody ask for this? Well, I'm sure the two Bryans asked for this. And one of the things in this time around, Raleigh Tyler is the Brian Brown character. He has some new special effects and gadgets that he's playing with. He is now in a relationship with a new woman who, with a child, and he's brought in to do some work on another, this time on a police job, but of course, like in the original, things don't go according to plan. So same setup where Brian Brown is on the run and he's using his wits and his gadgets to help him get out of certain situations. What this film does have compared to the first, it has more time with Dennehy and Brown together. And it's fun to watch those two work together. They were both solid in the first FX, but we get some playful banter with the two of them. Joanna Gleason and Philip Bosco are in the second one as well. So I give this one a pass where it's probably not necessary on paper, but worth checking out because now it's on Blu-ray, so you can watch the two of them. But because there's a lot of sequels out there, even if they were not, I mean, FX was a surprise hit and, you know, is not not Marvel level as far as a success, but just a good, solid film and a decent, solid sequel. So there you go. That is out. So, yeah, Invasion of the Body Snatchers and the two FX films on Kino Lorber as a part of the KL Studio Classics on Blu-ray. I don't know if they're on DVD. I have to check that out. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. A few notes. Again, at the time of this recording, check ahead. Make sure these events are still happening because the weather is weird. Friday, or I should say Saturday, February 5th, that's Saturday, at Arts for Lawrence, at Movies at the Fort, at 7 o'clock, I'll be hosting The Wiz from the Sidney Lumet musical from 1978. Once again, The Wiz, Saturday night, 7 o'clock at Films at the Fort at Arts for Lawrence. That, of course, is 8920 Otis Avenue in Indianapolis/Lawrence. And anyway, I'll be there hosting. I'll be doing a little Robert Osborne, Ben Mankiewicz impression at the beginning of the film. So a good chance to see The Wiz on the big screen. You know you want to. Over at IU Cinema, Friday, February 4th at 7 p.m. is a part of the International Art House series, Faya Dei. Friday at February 4th at 10 p.m. as part of the Not Quite Midnight series, Crypto Zoo, Faya Dei, and I'm sorry if I'm butchering that. That is also going to be played on Sunday, February 6th at 1 o'clock. Tuesday, February 8th, the Pauline Vieira Shorts program at 7 p.m. Thursday, February 10th, a virtual event, A Conversation with Pauline Vieira, at 7 o'clock. Friday, February 11th, at 7 o'clock, International Art House Series. Yes, The Tragedy of Macbeth. Well worth seeing Denzel and Francis and everybody else on the big screen if you can. Friday, February 11th, at 10 p.m., as a part of the Not Quite Midnight Series, a new 4K restoration of New York Ninja. Sunday, February 13th at 1 o'clock, they will be showing The Tragedy of Macbeth once again. Thursday, February 17th at 7 p.m., Lured from 1947. February 18th, special virtual event at 7 o'clock. And Then They Came for Us. Filmmaker Abby Ginsberg and one of the film's subjects, Satsuki Aina, will be present for a virtual conversation and interactive Q&A. All of that is happening over at IU Cinema. Over at the Can-Can this weekend, Paddington on Saturday the 5th, The Conversation on February the 4th on Friday. If you get a chance, see that on the big screen. February 5th, The Heritage Series, Wilmington Coup and the OC Massacre. Coming on February 10th, Yinhas Act 1. Coming February 11th, Licorice Pizza, a film that made my top five this past year. Also starting February 11th, the documentary Nation Time. Also opening Friday, February 11th, the film Torn. Saturday the 12th, the Heritage Series Jim Crow Explained and Jim Crow of the North. February 13th, Some Like It Hot. February 14th and 15th, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind for you Valentine's Day fans out there. And February 16th, Watermelon Woman will be coming. Also starting February 18th, The Worst Person in the World. Really good lead performance in that film. All of that happening over at Can-Can Indie. Over at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Friday and Saturday, February 11th and 12th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Roman Holiday. Friday, February 18th at 7:30 p.m. as a part of the Sponsor's Choice High Plains Drifter. Sponsor's Choice on February 19th at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, February 19th, A Few Good Men. And then Friday and Saturday, February 25th and 26th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Princess Bride, all happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this past week. Hopefully you got to see some good films that are new or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And we start on Facebook with Kathleen, who writes Phantom Thread, Kevin Costner in Robin Hood, as well as Under Suspicion. Tina writes Mass, my number two film of last year. James writes Gator Bait and Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers. That's a double feature, I'm sure of it. Julie writes Goodfellas, which she means Goodfellas. Anthony writes T-34, the most realistic tank fighting scenes I've ever seen in a movie. It's a Russian-German film, some plot holes, but not many, and of course a love interest, which is totally unrealistic. Thank you, Tony. T also writes The Fallout. Michael writes The Haunted Strangler, and it's the one with Boris Karloff. Kevin writes Nomadland. Joshua writes The Eyes of Tammy Faye and Eight Men Out. David writes The Tragedy of Macbeth and Greyhound. Kim writes The Tender Bar. Judy writes Encanto and Ice Age. Lou Harry writes Hell's a Poppin', Kiss Me Stupid, and Nobody. John writes The Colony and rates it 3 out of 5. Certainly not great, but interesting. Jamie writes all 4 Shrek movies. Whew, that's a haul. Eric writes, for first view, Ridley Scott's almost great The Last Duel, and his rewatches this week, David and Lisa from 1962, Inglourious Basterds, Reds from 1981, 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, and Harper from 1966. Terry chimes in, Harper is a lot of fun. I used to own it on VHS and have seen it in an unknown number of times, but not in many moons. So a rewatch is overdue. I like Reds a lot. Enthralling might be my choice, single word to describe it. Going further, it's an ambitious and, for my money, accomplished epic. Speaking of epics, Inglourious Basterds is an undoubtedly great one in the revisionist history according to Quentin Tarantino canon, along with Django Unchained and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. A lot to choose from in Inglourious Basterds, but his favorite scene is probably the entire beer hall sequence. Yep, there you go. Steven writes, Buster Keaton's Battling Butler, and we started streaming As We See It. Lee writes, Parallel Mothers. Stephanie writes, Regarding Henry, rewatch. Only decent thing J.J. Abrams was ever a part of. Wow. Harrison Ford was great and snubbed by the industry. I think you mean snubbed by the Academy, and I'd have to see who won that year and who else was nominated. But Stephanie, you speak strongly over Regarding Henry. Okay. Scott writes Interstellar. Mark writes Little Big Man. Khalif writes The Mitchells Against the Machines and deemed it my daughter's pick. That's okay. That film was better than I thought it would be. Sam Watermeyer writes Rosewater, Shock and Awe, and Happiness. Austin, Medium Cool Podcast, writes, we need to talk about Cosby. Jim writes Belfast. Mike writes Green Fire, Aldo Leopard, and A Land Ethic for Our Time. David writes Don't Look Up and deemed it yikes. Finished all 15 seasons of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, not in one sitting, friends, and the 2013 film version of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Thank you, David. Melissa writes Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Don writes A League of Their Own. Rachel writes Labyrinth. Teresa writes Meatballs, Little Darlings, Jersey Boys, Hidden Figures, and the original Escape to Witch Mountain. So somebody's going back in their childhood. Thanks, Teresa. Dylan writes Jackie Brown. It had been a while, but it's better than ever. Quentin Tarantino's best movie, hands down. And I'm with him on that. So there you go. As is Jeff So my buddy Jeff. Abby writes, to catch a serial killer, Finding Doc Holliday and Shang-Chi. Wayne writes, Tender Bar, good coming-of-age film. Nikki writes, we watched a blank show called Vivarium. Thank God it was only 90 minutes long. Hang in there, Nikki. Julia writes, Jewel Robbery. Richard writes, Begin Again. Britt writes, Belle and Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Doug writes, Strike Me Pink from 1936, Singing in the Rain, All Fall Down, and Raya and the Last Dragon. Jeff writes, Nobody and Shallow Hal. Jeffrey writes, Rush Hour, Raising Arizona, and About Schmidt with Howard Hessman, as we mentioned earlier. Daniel writes, Charge of the Light Brigade, Batman, and Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Nick Rogers writes, Venom, Let There Be Carnage, The Mothman Prophecies, A Private War, Sentinel, Master of the World, and Curfew. Susie writes, The Calling. Missy writes, They Call Me Mr. Tibbs, and A Midsummer Night's Dream, the one with Kevin Kline and a stellar cast, she writes. Joe writes, The Tudors, Seasons 3 and 4, Being the Ricardos, The Organization, Ozark, Season 4, Episode 1, Munich, The Edge of War, and Under Suspicion. Angela writes, A River Runs Through It, Legends of the Fall, and The Breakfast Club. Charity writes, Alien and Aliens. Gary writes, Man from Nowhere and War Gods of the Deep. Jared writes, Nobody and Encanto. Mary writes, Paper Moon. Kurt writes, March of the Penguins was on the screen this past weekend, just in time for the ice storm cometh. Thank you, Kurt. Hang in there. Stay warm. Mike writes, Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. Taylor writes, Double Indemnity. Phil writes, The Accidental Tourist. Jeff writes, The Eyes of Tammy Faye. John announces, only family movies this week, Shrek, Kung Fu Panda, and Encanto. Nothing wrong with that. Carrie writes, 355, the 355. John writes, The Batman, the 1943 serial. There you go. That's old school. Mario writes, La Notte de Cabrera, Knights of Cabrera. Tom writes, What We Do in the Shadows and the Divergent series. David writes, Us, Hector and the Search for Happiness, The Highwaymen, Trumbo, and Being the Ricardos. Aaron writes, Matrix... Hold on a second here. More requests here at Film Sociology. I should unplug the phone, but I don't. All right, where was I? Andrea writes, Carnage. Jeff writes, Wonder Woman 1984, Adventures in Babysitting, and Encanto. John writes, Chorus Line. Patty writes, Crook's Tour. Terry writes, First Time Viewings, The Lusty Men, Not as a Stranger, Landscape Suicide, and Dr. X. His rewatches, Shadow of a Doubt, Family Plot, Cape Fear, the original, and Ghost World. Michael writes, Planet of Dinosaurs and The Long Riders. Eric writes, Respect. Melissa writes, Spider-Man No Way Home, again. Lucinda writes, The Fallout. James writes, Blood Orgy of the She-Devils from 1972. I know that one. Todd writes, We watched Special Correspondence last night and liked it a lot. You really can't go wrong with Ricky Gervais. Gary writes, The Way of the Dog, and then chimed in, I need Cliff's Notes. No, you don't, Gary. Just watch it again. It's really that good. Pamela writes, Flight and Georgetown. Randy writes, Resolved, TV has been better than movies at least since Breaking Bad, possibly The Sopranos. I love movies. I took a film history class in college. I used to record and watch every movie that was 3.5 or 4 stars. But there was no film I look forward to seeing as much as season 6 of Better Call Saul. I'm intrigued by what I've heard about Belfast, but I can't think of any film I'd rather see than the next episode of HBO's The Righteous Gemstones. Case in point, What We Do in the Shadows was an entertaining film, but the TV series has greatly improved upon it. Noah Hawley's TV versions of Fargo took the film to higher levels. I can't think of any movie I'd rather see now than Asimov's Foundation on Apple TV, just for starters. Randy, you're not the only one that feels that way. I just keep looking for movies, so nothing wrong with that. If I was doing streaming or series sociology, I'd be watching those more, but that's what I... Anyway, I understand your situation. There's a lot of other folks that feel that way, so have at it. And finally, Linda writes, What If? Fisherman's Friends and How We See It is great on Prime, but a series. And that's how we end this week. That's okay. Nothing wrong with that. So, yeah, there you go. Hopefully you got to watch some films that were new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And people chime in about watching series. That's fine. However, if you're a series binger, you can't complain about a film's length anymore. That's all. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Hope to see you in Lawrence at Arts for Lawrence Theater, Movies at the Fort for the Wiz on Saturday at 7 p.m. And we'll try this again next week. Stay warm, stay healthy, stay good to one another, and find some good movies. And take care until next time. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!